Welcome to this week's episode of Gustako, an LSE Beaver podcast series in collaboration with the Pakistan Society. Gustako means conversation in Urdu, and this series will feature candid conversations regarding South Asian social issues, culture, and identity. This week, I am joined by Marvi Sermon, a journalist and human rights activist based in Pakistan who has long been a prominent feminist voice in the country. We sit down to discuss the Aurat March, translated Women's March, an annually held demonstration in celebration of International Women's Day, now an important symbol for women's voice, strength and freedom in the country. Trigger warning. This episode discusses rape and sexual assault from minutes 18:30 to 21:30. Hi Marvi Aunty. It's so great to have you for this week's podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm especially excited about today's episode. Firstly, because women's rights issues in Pakistan has always been something that I've been very concerned with. And I'm also especially excited because I have with me Marvi Sarmad, someone who's been a very prominent and persistent voice for women's rights issues in Pakistan. And someone who holds a very progressive, very fearless, courageous take on them. So to start off, Marvi Aunty, today you're an experienced journalist and a human rights activist. And I'd like to firstly ask you to share why you chose this profession.
Thank you, Vita, for such kind words. So about why did I choose journalism and human rights defense? You know, when you are growing up in a time when there is a military dictatorship and that military dictatorship is taking out all the anger on women and minorities, religious minorities. One person who is the usurper of the power, of legitimate power, he is trying to legitimize himself in the eyes of the people in the name of religion. And his entire focus is women's bodies, how to control women's bodies. In those times, I remember it was 1983 perhaps, and I was a very young child. And my mother, being a housewife, but a housewife with a lot of ambition, given a choice, she would have been, running for the prime minister. Now, my father was in civil service, which means he was a part of the administration that General Ziaul-Haq was running. And my mother was an activist through and through. She fought against burqa when her in-laws tried to impose on her. Fast forward 1983, the time when I decided, the day when I decided I will become an activist and I will speak up, was the day when Asma Jahangir had announced a protest demonstration against General Ziaul-Haq's policy, one particular law. According to this law, women's witness was halved. And it was said that it is in Quran, which was not true. It's a very, very narrow definition of the religion. So against that, women were coming out and Asma Jahangir had announced and so many women went. That day was a horrible day. Police was beating all the women. I mean, that was unheard of in Pakistan, women being beaten up on the streets. And not only the women, the legends like Habib Jalib, he was a poet. He was also beaten up. And my mother was doubly worried. One, I was a little kid. I was, I think, 10 years old or so. And police was throwing shells, tear gas shells and everything. And I was coughing like mad. Another worry was that what will she tell her husband? She didn't want him to know that she was among the protesters against his establishment. So that day, I decided I will become Asma Jahangir one day. I could not become Asma Jahangir, but I think I will someday. But I really wanted to do that. And about journalism, it always fascinated me. My father was a very senior bureaucrat in the information department in Punjab. And at that time, when we were growing up and General Ziaul-Haq's martial law was there, there was a censorship policy, very strict censorship on newspapers. There were no TV channels, just one TV channel that didn't have a censorship policy because it was being run by the General Ziaul-Haq's administration. So my father was in charge of the censorship for the newspaper. So every day he would take me because the newspapers would come in the evening. So in the evening, he would sit in the office and he would lead the team who would censor the newspapers. And I would just see the entire process there. And the editors and the senior journalists would come and explain to my father what so-and-so sentence meant and why it should not be censored. So I grew up seeing that. And that is why I've taken too long.
No, that's really interesting. I love that it's so closely tied to your childhood and that it's in your blood, the work that you do. So I'm going to start then talking about the topic of the day, the Earth March. Today, I wanted to really address the ignorance around the Earth March. I think our people have a lot of misconceptions around it, and I wanted to unpack some of those. And the first thing that I wanted to ask was the importance of Earth March historically for the cause of women's rights and well-being in Pakistan. Sometimes you hear this critique, something around the lines of, why don't you go and practically do something for women that are suffering? And to address this very, say, ignorant criticism, I wanted to ask you, what has Earth March achieved for the women of Pakistan?
A very important question indeed. So Earth March started in its present form in 2017-2018, but the Women's March, International Women's Day, 8th of March. Women have been doing it much before, you know, even I was a kid. As a kid, my mother has taken me to, Women's Day Rally. We used to call it Women's Day Rally. And these rallies used to be in Karachi, in Lahore. As WAF, we call it Women's Action Forum. These organizations have played a huge role in raising awareness around women's issues. And in those days also, it has always attracted vitriol. I remember we were called Maghrib Zada, we were called West-inspired people who want to destroy Pakistan's culture, Pakistan's values and family values. But the difference that these young feminists from Pakistan have made through Earth March is, and by the way, we have had two rallies in a year. One was for International Women's Day, the other was for Pakistan's National Women's Day, that is on 12th of February, the day women were beaten up in 1983. Also, we used to have a rally on 10th of December, which is the International Human Rights Day. So our activities used to keep going throughout the year, and most of them were test against the state, because the policies of the state, the laws of the state, and the absence of laws, that used to hurt us. And women thought that it's the first step is to convince the state to recognize crimes against women as crimes and criminalize every kind of violence against women. That is why we were just talking to the state, either demanding the repealing of certain laws or demanding the formation of certain laws. And because of that focus, now today you see so many pro-women laws, so many laws that guarantee, if not guarantee, but that support gender equality. And these achievements of 20 years could not have come if women from our previous generations would not have started coming out and voicing their concerns and voicing their demands. The difference with this Earth March thing is they divided the focus on the state and the society as well. Women are now talking to the society. Women are now pinching the society where it hurts the most, challenging the gender stereotypes that are prevalent in the society, and entire society is responsible to eradicate them. It's not just the state. The slogans of the Earth March are challenging the not only gender stereotypes, but the patriarchal framework of women's existence, the socially constructed gender roles that have been there throughout the world, not only in Pakistan, throughout the world, but in the world, the societies have learned to face the criticism of the patriarchy. In Pakistan, it's new, I think. Although women have been doing it since long, you know, when women in the West, in USA, were burning their bras, in Pakistan, women were burning their dupattas. There was a big incident in Karachi where when Zaul Haq's government imposed dupatta on women. So these feminists got together and they burned their dupattas in public view. Our feminists, previous generations, have done a lot of work. And now Earth March, the young feminists, have taken it to just another level.
Indeed, that's very true. And also, I'd say to build on to that, I have a similar critique now. You mentioned just now the importance of sort of women coming out and marching and voicing their opinions and their demands. And one of the critiques of the Auth March that I hear, and I hear this from women a lot, women who have, in my opinion, internalized this patriarchal narrative in society, and they'll say something along the lines of, I care about women's rights, but I don't care for marching. And the idea is, of course, the idea that Pakistan's a very religious society, it's also a very segregated society, and you don't see a lot of women in public spaces. I'd say people struggle with the idea of a woman going out in the public, sharing her opinions, asking for what she wants. And this, I see, is sort of embedded in every class, in every social group of the country, really. And of course, in many ways, that's how patriarchy is enabled, and that's how it continues to thrive in society. And I sort of wanted to know what your answer would be to someone who says something like that. Why do you think is it really important for women, and has been in the past, as you mentioned, for women to march? Why can't women just ask for their rights at home? You mentioned, of course, not just when they have something to say to the state, but when they have something to say to the society as well. Why must women leave their homes, come out on the streets, and have their voices heard?
You see, it is very important to voice your concern. Otherwise, no one is going to take you seriously, take your concern seriously, or find any solutions for them. You have to show that you care. If you can show you care from the comfort of your home, well and good, it's your choice. If some women think they need to be heard, so be it. Why are some people so worried about that? Women are not completely inside the four walls in Pakistan. Women go out, women are becoming doctors. In fact, number of women medical doctors is much more than men. That cannot happen if you remain in four walls, which means women go out. Women are flying planes, going to the armed forces, going to the police, and we celebrate these women. They are not in the four walls. So why is it that when women come out and tell the society and the state that the ages-old patriarchal framework will not be accepted anymore, only then women's coming out is a problem? I'll touch your previous question. You also referred to another critique of women, that why these women who march out every year, why don't they go and do something for the actual women? So here's the thing. These are actual women. The slogans that you see, each slogan is a story in itself. And the women who are holding these slogans, they have lived those stories. And if they do not come out and tell their stories, you will never know what kind of experiences women have to face throughout their lives, which men and the patriarchal structure, entire patriarchal structure, actually takes for granted. The women who are suffering, women who march, are actually working for those women. Because if those women are suffering because lack of access to justice, we are actually voicing their demand. And these women who are coming out, they're not responsible for the state policies. They're not the ones who need to provide access to justice, who need to provide equal opportunities. The state that has to do it. These women who are marching out are actually working for the entire fabric of society, not just the women. And also taking advantage of this, just two more sentences, that feminism means you have to believe in the absolute equality of everyone. Every gender, your sex, your sexual preference, your sexual expression, religion, sect, nationality, nothing on God's green earth can make one individual, one human being subordinate to the other. Taking into account this principle, feminists have been there and are there for creating that environment, and for asking the state to create that environment and to challenge the very patriarchal structure and very patriarchal social constructs that are responsible for the suffering of those women who these critics are saying are the real women, and the women who march are not.
Right, that's really true. I love where you mention the fact that these are the women that come out on the march and have placards. It's their experiences, and they're speaking up about their experiences. And so to sort of expand on that, I next wanted to talk about diversity and representation within the Auth March. Another one of the very ignorant complaints against the movement is that it's not inclusive enough, perhaps of women from lower classes and such. And I say ignorant because we've all seen that that's perhaps not the case, and I wanted you to elaborate on how diverse and inclusive the Aurat March really is, and how it's one of the very, in my opinion, one of the very few places and platforms in Pakistan that are in fact diverse and inclusive.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Aurat March is more inclusive than Parliament. Parliament of Pakistan does not look like Pakistan, does it? You know, you go out on the bazaars, you see chabriwalas, you see mazdoor, you see laborers, but we don't see these people in the parliament. But we still believe that the parliament can work for the entire Pakistan. Similarly, you look at Supreme Court of Pakistan, you don't see, it doesn't look like Pakistan. It's the elite capture. Whenever you talk of the student union, the trade unions, you will always hear male voices. But the women voices who are in the labor unions and the unions of the farmers, how many times you have heard of a woman who is a farmer and voicing their concerns? But in Aurat March, we see these women. What I think we need to do more on, we as in feminists and Aurat March, is including and reaching out, also covering the issues faced by the ethnic minorities in Pakistan, especially the Baloch women. Although in Aurat March statement in the manifesto, we see this issue was touched, but I think there needs to be a greater role of the women from ethnic minorities. We should not repeat what the white feminism in 1960s or 70s in USA or the suffragette movement in UK did. And there should be just one feminism in Pakistan that should be inclusive for everyone. I'm not saying it is not, but we have to work really hard on that. But to answer your question, the last line is the critics are absolutely wrong. They have absolutely no idea what women Aurat March is and what kind of women, which segments of society are actually active participants of Aurat March.
Right. Before we move on and change the topic, I wanted to, about this criticism thing, just address one last thing. The hate and the propaganda. The misinformation that happens almost every year before or after the Aurat March is held. And my question is not of doom and gloom. My question is about how, in the face of such consistent backlash and of the cause being so misunderstood, personally, I'd say it demoralizes me at times. So for activists and young girls and women that are fighting for their rights, is there any message that you would want to give them? Something along the lines of where should they be gaining their strength from in times like these?
Yes. So I think the backlash should not demoralize us. The backlash only means that you are hitting the point where it hurts the most. And if you're hitting the point where it hurts the most, if you're brushing it from the wrong side, which means you are making your mark. It means you are being successful. So that should only, I think, rejuvenate our energies more rather than demoralizing us. And if some young activists feel demoralized, they should just think about what kind of power they enjoy by making a difference. This is the digital age, and this is the age of the social media. And in fact, Aurat March was hugely successful because of the social media. It's outreached, multiplied. I think reaching out to the communities that have not been included yet, and just continuing our struggle, come what may, I think that's the only way forward.
That's very, very true. To move on, when the Aurat March was taking place, I came across this 15-point agenda that was released by the Aurat March organizers in Sindh, and it really outlined their demands to end gender-based violence. And it had some very detailed steps, some very robust solutions to the problems of increasing rape and sexual harassment in the country. But a few days ago, of course, all of us witnessed some very, very disappointing remarks by our Prime Minister, who made comments that blamed the rise of rape and sexual assault cases on the way that women dress in our country, essentially victim blaming. So I was hoping, before we end the interview, if you could perhaps talk a bit about that. The question that I really wanted to get at was, what do you think the ideal government should have done instead? What do you think that the ideal government should have done in response to what happens every year at the Earth March? I mean, I personally think that the state is quite silent in the face of the Earth March. And also, what ideally should have they done in response to the rise in rape and sexual assault cases? In terms of policy, of course, but also their comments to the public.
Yes, very important indeed. I think Prime Minister's statement was very disappointing, and you know, that's something that is demoralizing. But I think that also strengthens our resolve to tackle the issue not only by talking to the state, but by talking to the society and to the civil society and the people who matter. And these people who matter become the, when they become the prime ministers, he was just speaking his mind. He represents that huge chunk of our society that is with a certain mindset that always, always look at women as an object. And I think this statement is wrong at so many levels. We would need a series of, you know, lectures for Mr. Khan to school him in why linking obscenity, thing as subjective as obscenity, to the rapes, and why it is so wrong when it comes from the prime minister of a country. He did not for once talk about the rapist. His disgust for the act was evident, but it did not come out so well that he was upset on the rapist as well. His statement just told women that they are responsible for the violence and the sexual violence against themselves. And that's very disturbing. The second question about what the state should have done, I mean, an ideal state, I don't know if an ideal state exists anywhere in the world, but even a remotely responsible state should at least, I mean, if not the policies, in past 20 years, Pakistan has made a lot of good steps. And if you're not talking just about the government or the parliament, entire state structure, made certain steps that have been really positive for gender equality for women. But what a state should be doing, not support or not contribute to the rape culture. And I think Prime Minister's recent statement has contributed to rape culture. So I think the various things the state can do, and the basic thing is to be responsible enough not to contribute to the rape culture.
Right, thank you very much. That's very true. So to end the interview now, I'd like to invite you to share any ending remarks that you have for all the young girls and boys that are perhaps listening to this podcast right now.
So the youngsters, boys and girls, men and women who are listening to this, I think the best thing would be to be a feminist, all of you. Yeah, I mean, working for women's empowerment and working for women's rights is okay, but believe in the notion of equality. That's the best thing. And also, if you want to change the world, be the change. Change yourself.
Right, I love that. That's very true. Be a feminist. Okay then, thank you so much, Marvi Aunty, for joining us. It was a treat to have you, and it was a treat to have this conversation with you.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening to our discussion. This week, I sat down with Marvi Sermat, a fellow ardent feminist, to discuss the annual Women's March and its importance for women's rights in Pakistan. We spoke on the origins and history of the march, its importance for the cause of Pakistani women's freedom, and the various critiques that are levied at demonstrators almost every year. The music for this episode was Lighter Marches by the Tamash Fiends. This is your host Vinaya Ikram Rao signing off. To hear more from the Beaver Sound, subscribe to us on Spotify.